This is Jay Sekulow, Terror Strikes New Zealand.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
We share common values, and the one that we place the currency on right now and tonight is our compassion and the support for the community of those directly affected by this tragedy. And secondly, the strongest possible condemnation of the ideology of the people who did this. You may have chosen us, but we utterly reject and condemn you.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
It's a shockingly high death toll from these shootings. 49 people confirmed dead by New Zealand police. And police believe that this attack was very well planned in advance. And it's interesting to note that much of it was planned and publicized online as well.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
There has been a major terror attack in New Zealand. This time, the people targeted were Muslims at worship in a mosque. They were peaceful. They were just engaged in Friday prayers, and gunmen came in, or 49 dead. President Trump said, "My warmest sympathy and best wishes go out to the people of New Zealand after the horrible massacre in the mosque. 49 innocent people have been so senselessly died, with so many more seriously injured. The U.S. stands by New Zealand for anything we can do. God bless all." Richard Grenell, the ambassador to Germany from the United States, "Heartbreaking, people peacefully worshiping were targeted. Extremism must be called out, condemned, and stopped." The New Zealand Prime Minister you just heard from, she was very clear as well. Benjamin Netanyahu from Israel. "Israel mourns the wanton murder of innocent worshippers in Christchurch and condemns the brazen act of terror in New Zealand. Israel sends its condolences to the bereaved families and its heartfelt wishes for a speedy recovery to the wounded." Theresa May from the UK said, "On behalf of the UK, my deepest condolences to the people of New Zealand after the horrifying terrorist attack in Christchurch. My thoughts are all with those affected by the sickening act of violence."
Yes, I mean, I think we have to be very clear here as a predominantly Judeo-Christian country, where we've dealt with a lot of Islamic extremist terror attacks, and we've condemned those. When white supremacists carry out attacks on peaceful worshipers who may not share our faith and are of the Muslim faith, we must condemn it the same way. It is the same kind of terrorism. It was organized, orchestrated, premeditated. It was a white supremacist and who again, carried out this attack on peaceful worshipers during Friday prayer, men, women, and children, coordinated explosive devices, two different mosques. 49 people have already lost their life who were just going to pray. And though we may not share their faith, no people anywhere around the world should ever have to live in fear of going to their place of worship to pray or to take part in their worship. And we must condemn this to the fullest extent. This is the kind of extremism, white extremism, that we do not want spreading around the world, that we've unfortunately seen some uptick in Europe and now in New Zealand, and sometimes in our own country as well, like the attack in the synagogue in Pennsylvania. So it affects all of us when there's an attack like this on any who are trying to exercise their right, like they have in New Zealand, to choose their faith and exercise their faith, engage their faith in a peaceful way. And it is, again, I just want to make it clear how we condemn this as an act of terror, just as if this was an Islamic radical attacking a church in New Zealand. It is the exact same. It is there is no difference, no gray area. This is that same kind of terrorism.
No, it's called terrorism for a reason. It was to terrorize those engaged in an exercise of their right. That was the right to worship according to the dictates of our conscience. For these worshipers, 49 of which are dead, they were Muslims. They were not engaged in acts of violence. They were in peaceful worship when they were attacked and killed. Extremism, as Rick Grenell said, anywhere has to be condemned. We'll take your calls and comments on this at 1-800-684-3110. We also are going to have an update on Pastor Saul's case. We got a major move at the UN. We'll talk about that as well. We're going to be back with your calls at 1-800-684-3110, your comments on Facebook and Periscope as well. And don't forget to support the work of the ACLJ, as we've got a team in the UN in Geneva right now on Pastor Saul's case. ACLJ.org for that, ACLJ.org. Back with your calls at 800-684-3110 in just a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Interesting comment coming in on Facebook from Vicki Taylor. She says, terrorism is terrorism, no matter who carries it out. Prayers for all. Wes Smith, in addition to be a colonel retired in the United States Army, was a chaplain, is a pastor. This was an attack on Muslims that were peacefully engaged in worship.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's deplorable. As I mentioned during the break, it's also cowardly because places of worship generally do not have the means to defend themselves. And so this is an attack not only on Muslims. They happen to be Muslims. It's also an attack on faith and on people of faith. And you see it over and over around the world. I mean, this is, unfortunately, this happens far too often. And you have the Coptic churches, for example, in Egypt, that where they are attacked because they know the people are not armed. It's a soft target. You have the synagogues in Pennsylvania. You have this going on in New Zealand. It is extremely cowardly. But it is not just an attack on an ethnic group or a religion. It's an attack on people of faith everywhere. When this kind of thing happens, Jay, it's not just an attack on the Muslim faith. I see it as an attack on all people of faith. Yep. And we stand in solidarity with them today and in grief.
Before we go to the soundbite from this morning from the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, I do want to let people know we will update you on the congressional, the national emergency vote, 12 Republicans joining with Democrats. It's not a veto-proof majority, so we're expecting a veto, the first veto of President Trump's presidency soon, and we will update you about that. We'll give you the senators, tell you who voted how in the second half hour of the broadcast, but we want to spend some time right now on what happened in New Zealand and then update you on an important matter with Pastor Saw, who was imprisoned in China, his wife today at the United Nations Human Rights Council. Here is the Prime Minister of New Zealand describing this terror attack, this horrendous tragedy. Take a listen, Byte 22.
We share common values, and the one that we place the currency on right now and tonight is our compassion and the support for the community of those directly affected by this tragedy. And secondly, the strongest possible condemnation of the ideology of the people who did this. You may have chosen us, but we utterly reject and condemn you.
You know, I go then to Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, because I just want to make a contrast, because I think it shows, you know, people ask why we have this special relationship with Israel. That issue's come up recently, and I don't want to get into the politics of that right now. But the Prime Minister of Israel was quick to respond on Twitter. He's a different time zone. Benjamin Netanyahu tweeting out that Israel mourns the wanton murder of innocent worshipers. That's what we're talking about too. Innocent worshipers in a place where they have the freedom to worship in Christ Church, and condemns the brazen act of terror in New Zealand. Israel sends its condolences to the bereaved families and its heartfelt wishes for a speedy recovery to the wounded. Now, when the last night when the alarms were going off in Israel because of rocket attacks from Gaza, you didn't see those kind of condemnations coming out of the rest of the region that Israel is in. So that is why, I'm not going to get into the Arab politics of this right now, but that is why we have a special relationship with Israel. They recognize that right to religious freedom and how this is this terrorism against Muslims is just as condemnable as terrorism against Jews. Unfortunately, that doesn't always get condemned as much.
Yeah, but no, you're absolutely right, and we're condemning it the same way. Now, Harry Hutchison, our director of policy, you had an interesting comment during the break that we shared with Facebook and Periscope. I think it's worth restating as to the nature of what we're dealing with here.
Yes, so I suggested that terror is almost always a political statement grounded in suppression, violence, and subordination. And while mass shootings in New Zealand are very rare, the location of the shooting suggests that eternal vigilance is required in virtually every single nation on Earth. At bottom, this is simply a coordinated attack led apparently by an Australian, and it is simply the face of evil, and my hope is that we never lose our capacity to recognize and condemn evil in the strongest possible terms in every single location on Earth.
All right, so let me do this. Let's go ahead and take a phone call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110.
Jerry in Rhode Island on line one. Jerry, welcome to JSEC Hill Live.
Hey, Jerry.
Hello, team. Yep. To the colonel. What do you think the objective of this group attacking these Muslims, or what was in their manifesto? Why do they? Why there and why now?
I think they do that because it's a soft target, and these people, they do not want anyone to return fire. They are cowards. They are terrorists, and they are cowards. But also, he did have this 74-page manifesto, Jay, and in that manifesto, he lauded the praises of Dylann Roof, who is the young man who shot up the church in Charleston, South Carolina. He actually mentions him by name.
And remember, Dylann Roof went to a church in South Carolina and killed Christians.
Yes.
Right.
And he mentions this in his manifesto. And what it reminds me of is that even though Charleston is 8,000 miles away plus from Christchurch, New Zealand, because of social media, the world has become a much smaller place, and it allows for radical extremism to spread literally around the world, to make the world small in that sense, and it also allows them to recruit and inspire people. I think what we're witnessing here, to the caller's point, is an alliance through social media of evil and extremism and violence, and this person or persons, they were attacking them because they're Muslims. There was something in the manifesto about being resentful of immigrants coming from the Middle East and that kind of thing. But the bottom line is, Harry says it's political. It is that. It is also, anti-religion. And they choose these targets, to the caller's question, because they are soft targets. And it allows them to reap violence based on their prejudice and the darkness of their hearts without risking their own lives.
What we can't allow is a white supremacist style ISIS online movement. Not like a caliphate style, but the online movement that they have, like Wes is talking about, where they're able to interconnect and communicate pretty openly and easily. And so it doesn't matter if they're white supremacists in New Zealand or in the Southeast or in the Northeast in Pennsylvania attacking a Jewish synagogue, or in, as we've seen, a rise in anti-Semitism in Western Europe and Central Europe. We cannot allow for this kind of white supremacism to be acceptable. We have to condemn it. And I think those of us who may share that skin color and skin tone have to be the ones out there condemning it the strongest. Because you see how statements and actions sometimes long ago, sometimes in different parts of the world, different countries, different nations, inspire others to act. When I saw this last night pop up on my phone, it was late at night. I think it was after midnight, but I immediately took to Twitter. And I'm careful about doing that late at night when you're just getting info. But when I saw that there were that many people killed at a mosque, and it was a white supremacist group responsible, I just tweeted out that it's pure evil to attack human beings in their house of worship. and it must be condemned, like just like those who target Christians. And I'm talking to those our Christian audience right now and our Jewish audience right now. We have to condemn this the same way. These were people, regardless of whatever faith they were, they had the right to be there under their nation's laws. They were peacefully gathering to worship the way they chose, which is a fundamental principle of our country as well. And they were targeted while they were in their place of worship. And that is never acceptable. Anywhere in the world, no one should have to worship in fear. It is unfortunate now that those who had to worship in fear were usually in the Middle East. Occasionally, we've seen acts of horrendous violence here in the U.S., the synagogue, Dylann Roof. I mean, we saw the church in Texas. So we've seen it here in the U.S., but we usually think of really tough countries for religious freedom where the governments don't do much to protect it. These are happening now in countries that have strong religious liberty. And yet still, I think probably a wake-up call to New Zealand about securing places of worship, because this kind of extremism can breed other extremism, as you can imagine. It plays into the handbook of a group like ISIS, who's still trying to recruit people to carry out domestic attacks. And that's a sad part about
it. You know there's no international legal definition of terrorism?
Yeah. Zealand says it, we don't say it. We don't say it because it means something very different in the U.S.
than it does there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Than, that's an interesting, because, you know, I know Than does a lot of work at the UN. There is no international definition of terrorism.
Yeah, and I mean, Jay, this is one of the reasons that we do work all across the world on behalf of people of various faiths to defend their right to gather and their right to worship, because it's not a thing that is seen through a universal lens, Jay, and it really is incumbent on the United States to point it out when it's a clear violation. Look, we find in our work, Jay, that the targets of this kind of violence are most often Christians and Jews, but look, regardless of who the target is in a given situation, the mentality is the same, and I think the words that Jordan used are the ones that we really need to land on. It's pure evil. The victims are not what determine the quality of the act. It's what is in the heart of the perpetrators. And in a case like this one, Jay, and in cases that we see all around the world, it's pure evil, and it has to be denounced.
Our team is in Geneva, Switzerland right now in the UN on behalf of Pastor Saul. And we're going to play in our break here on Facebook and Periscope the pastor's wife, Jamie Saul, talking to the UN Human Rights Council. We'll also play that for our radio audience when we come back from the break. For them, but very important time as our legal team is there trying to secure the release of this Christian pastor in jail in China. So we could use your prayers for that. And again, support the work of the ACLJ. We're in a matching challenge campaign, ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Again, let me condemn this horrendous act of terrorism against our fellow worshipers, if you will. We worship a different God. We have a different religion, but we want to be able to do so peacefully, without fear of being attacked while we do so, especially in countries like in the Western world, like in New Zealand. And we condemn this terror attack on the two mosques, which right now is reporting, and I'm sure these numbers could change, 49 people have innocent people have lost their lives while they were peacefully worshiping and following their rules and laws and their right to worship the way they so choose and worship the way they wanted, the religion they wanted, the faith they wanted, and to the terrorists who are responsible, who gruesomely planned this, filmed this. There's at least one person in custody charged with murder, others being looked at as well. I think at the high point there were four. There were explosive devices. I think thankfully those were not did not go off. Let's get this is a local New Zealand reporter just explaining to Fox News today what it was like at one of these mosques. Take a listen, bite two.
Witnesses say the shooting went on for at least 5 or 6 minutes. It was a sustained attack. Police also found two bombs attached to a car, which did not go off. They were later defused. Now, police were able to detain four suspects fairly soon after the attack itself. One man is of particular interest. He's said to be in his late 20s, an Australian man. He has already been charged formally with murder. Two other suspects are still in custody.
So there you have it. I mean, it looks like it was definitely a planned attack by an individual, likely with assistance because of the bomb planting and the camera he had on, the ideological manifesto inspired by, of course, his other white supremacist attacks. But it is terrorism in its truest form when 49 people who are worshiping are killed. And if they're worshiping in a mosque or a church, at a synagogue, or any other kind of place of worship, you should be able to do so peacefully without fear of that happening to you or your family. So I want to make sure we condemn this just as strongly as we would condemn an attack by ISIS on a church in the Middle East or a terror attack by Hamas against Israel, that it needs to be condemned that strongly. And I hope we have done so today, made that clear today on the broadcast. Let me play Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and then we're going to shift gears a little bit here.
I want to offer my personal condolences to the nation of New Zealand in the wake of the grotesque mosque attacks in Christchurch. The thoughts and prayers of the American people are with the victims and their families today. The United States condemns this hateful assault. We pledge our unwavering solidarity with the government and people of New Zealand.
Folks, again, as news develops on this, if more information comes out throughout the show, we will update you on this. It is just pure evil, as I tweeted out, and pure evil has to always be condemned. Terrorism must always be condemned, whoever is being terrorized. And so I hope for our Muslim brothers and sisters in the United States and around the world, while we have some differences politically sometimes, that this is a place where we have no difference at all. No one ever deserves any kind of treatment like this or to have to live in fear of these kind of attacks, whether it's attending a Jewish synagogue in Pittsburgh, a church in Alabama or Texas, a church in Egypt or Syria or a mosque in New Zealand, especially in countries that protect religious freedom and hold it dear. We also, again, talking about religious liberty violations, we've updated you on the case of Pastor Saw. Pastor Saw is a American permanent resident with his wife and children here in the U.S. You've had on his sons on the broadcast. His wife, our Facebook and Periscope audience got to see it, but I want you to hear this. His wife, during this two-year ordeal, traveled with our team from the ACLJ to meet up with our ECLJ team, which is a recognized NGO at the UN, to deliver remarks. I've done it, folks, and we have our team, our professionals like me and our ECLJ team. We do this pretty regularly. But I will tell you, the impact it makes when you have someone's wife there, is very different. When you have someone who is not just doing this as a professional human rights activist. Jamie Saw made that trip while her husband has been in prison 2 years in China because of his Christian faith to Geneva and delivered the message this morning. Take a listen.
I am here today on behalf of my husband, Pastor Saul San Chang, a lawful permanent resident of the United States who for the past 2 years has been wrongfully imprisoned for simply living out his faith in China. I know my husband is only a wife can. He is not a criminal. He is a peaceful, caring pastor and humanitarian worker who has a compassionate heart. His humanitarian efforts in China are so well respected that even the Chinese government has previously recognized and rewarded them. This is why his imprisonment for these same efforts is so absurd. We traveled to China to try to see my husband, but my sons and I have not been allowed to see or speak with him directly. His health is deteriorating and he has lost over 50 pounds. He is confined to a crowded cell and waits for an appeal hearing that the court repeatedly and unjustly delays. Last year, my husband reflected on his imprisonment and wrote, "Like the Apostle Paul, I have learned how to live a rich and simple life. Now I live a free life even though I am without freedom. As long as the name of Jesus can be proclaimed, the bitterness of the flesh and blood not worth mentioning. But 2 years of suffering, sir, is too long. I am here today with the support of over 150,000 individuals from 162 countries and territories who have signed a petition to plead for the freedom of my husband. I respectfully ask that you make all efforts to secure his release and safe return to the United States to be reunited with our family. Thank you."
So that is that literally took place hours ago at the UN in Geneva. So our team is there on Pastor Saul's case. Wes, you just made an interesting point, though, about the increase of religious persecution, because these are tidbits of what you're seeing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Around the world, there is this alarming rise, not only of violence done in the name of religion, we think of ISIS, but violence and persecution against people who are religious. It's done by individuals like this man in New Zealand. It's done by groups like ISIS, but it's also done by governments. China has launched a crackdown on underground churches and on Christians. And if you look at what happens in China, in Nigeria, other places in Africa, parts of the Middle East, I think you can make the case that Christian persecution has not been this large and this widespread since the second and third century during the persecution of Christians during the Roman Empire. I think it is almost to that level, perhaps greater than that, if you look at the size of the world and the population of the world. People of religion are routinely being targeted, and Pastor Chow is one of those people.
Yeah, so you have the situation with the synagogue where Jewish members of our community in the United States were killed. You had that in Charleston. You had, of course, you've got the persecution cases. Then you have the attack on, as I said, the Christian church in Charleston, South Carolina. Now an attack on a Muslim peaceful worship service. And 50 people are dead because of a terrorist. And that's what, and then you got to call it what it is, no matter what the faith group is that's been impacted by it. Terrorism is terrorism, no matter where it takes place. We're coming up on the second half hour of the broadcast. We're going to get into some of the issues involving the veto that's forthcoming. Very big news there. And we got some other things we're going to follow up as well.
And remember that ECLJ was at the UN Human Rights Council earlier this week talking about the genocide of Christians.
Yes.
This is our second appearance before the Human Rights Council just this week. Be part of our matching challenge. Donate online at aclj.org. Double the impact of your donation. That's aclj.org. It's why we can bring Pastor Saul's wife to Geneva to deliver that testimony.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
All right, so as we condemn the terrorist attack in New Zealand, we will bring you updates on that as we have them. We're working on a message from our Be Heard project that you can share on your social media. I'll share on my social media condemning that attack so we can stand in solidarity condemning an attack on peaceful worshipers, regardless of whatever faith they are part of. In this case, the Muslim faith, gunned down by white supremacist terrorists. 49 people killed in New Zealand, another 20 injured, and that's just the latest numbers of this premeditated attack. So we'll have a way for you to share your support and also your condemnation for an attack like this, just like you would condemn any other attack on those who are peacefully worshiping. If it was someone, you know, your faith, you would condemn it. If it's someone else's faith, you'd need to condemn it just as much. And so we'll have that available for you so you can share it on social media and make sure people know that as many of you are Christian or come from the Jewish background, or our listeners and people who may not have faith at all, that you still condemn these kind of attacks. You don't just condemn it when it's a Jewish or Christian group. You condemn it when it's Muslims praying on their Friday prayers as well. But there is a lot to talk about in Washington, D.C. It got overshadowed a bit by what happened in New Zealand overnight, but that is that the president is set at any moment to issue his first veto. Than, tell everybody exactly what happened yesterday in the U.S. Senate on the vote on the national emergency declaration by President Trump.
Yeah, Jordan, so the vote was on a resolution of disapproval for the national emergency declaration that was issued by President Trump. And so those who voted in favor were voting to terminate that national emergency. Jordan, to send that resolution to the president's desk, it only needed to get 51 votes in the United States Senate. It was privileged, so it did not have to overcome a cloture motion. It just needed a simple majority to be sent to the president. But because of the president's promised veto, which we do expect at some point today, we knew that the Senate needed to get to 67 votes to pass the resolution of disapproval in a form that would actually have staying power, that would last and would actually block that emergency declaration from taking place. Jordan, they did not come close to reaching that level. The final vote was 59 senators in favor of terminating the resolution or the emergency declaration and 41 senators opposed to it. So 12 Republicans, Jordan, and I have the list if you want to go through them, but 12 Republicans voted with every Democrat to terminate the president's national emergency. If that resolution were to stand, Jordan, the declaration would be terminated. However, we expect at any moment the president to issue his promised veto. And what would happen then is the resolution would then be returned to the House of Representatives because they are the originating body. And Speaker Pelosi can decide whether or not she wants to put a vote on the House floor to try to override that presidential veto. Jordan, I know you know this, but just so our listeners do, when the House of Representatives originally passed this resolution of disapproval, it fell 40 votes short of the votes necessary to overturn a presidential veto. So at this point, the question in Washington, D.C. is, will Speaker Pelosi even put that vote to override the president's veto on the floor of House of Representatives? And at this point, we don't know that answer. But that will be the next step once the president issues his veto today.
And was it 8 votes short in the Senate to have it override with 59?
Yes, 59, 8 votes short if everyone is voting, yes.
Yeah, you have to have 67. Okay, we come back. We'll read you the names of those Republicans that decided to join their Democrats in condemning the president on this and trying to, again, this resolution of disapproval to try and stop the National Emergency Declaration for our border security. We'll go through the names. By the way, a couple names that people expected shifted. So we want to make sure we get those names out there as well. Some people we thought had given pretty clear indications. Some even wrote op-eds saying why this was so bad. Actually shifted their votes, Republicans who were not expected to do so. So we'll go through the names. I want to get your thoughts on this. What do you think about these 12 Republicans that signed on with Chuck Schumer and the Democrats in the Senate to condemn the president or rebuke the president, as the media likes to call it? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And do you support the president issuing his first veto?
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
So it's time we want to start taking your phone calls now on what will be the president's first veto as president of the United States. And unfortunately, he's having to veto a resolution against his declaration of a national emergency on our southern border, which we all know is a national emergency. The drugs problem, the human trafficking problem, the illegal immigration problem, and that border security is necessary, including more Border Patrol agents, more immigration judges, more asylum courts, and, of course, border barriers or border walls. But 13 Republicans in the House and now 12 Republican senators joined with Democrats against the president. Now, that is not a majority. Some of the media headlines are kind of fake newsing it, saying, you know, it was Republicans rebuke. This is a small group. But still, I'd like to get your thoughts on these 12, specifically in the Senate, who just voted yesterday. We'll go through the names. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. And do you support the president's veto so that this national emergency declared on our southern border stands and we can build the border barriers? 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. That's 1-800-684-3110. Than, first I want to talk about two individuals we thought were almost certainly going to vote for this resolution against the president's national emergency declaration. One, Tom Tillis of North Carolina. He wrote an op-ed in saying how horrible this would be, and yet he switched. Now, some are saying maybe that's politics. Maybe it was the conversations with the White House. The other senator, who wasn't as strong but certainly raised concerns and has not been shied away from disagreeing with the president when he does disagree, was Ben Sasse. Ben Sasse did not join this group either. I just want to make it clear, because we were listing them in some of the lists yesterday as likely voting against the president on this. Neither Tillis nor Sasse did. They voted with the president.
Yeah, that's correct. And we were listing them as likely, Jordan, because of their own words, as you mentioned. I mean, I would say both of those senators, Senator Tillis and Senator Sasse, their words before this resolution were pretty strong. They were pretty clear that they were going to vote in favor of this resolution of disapproval, which would be against the president. And you're right, in the end, neither of them did. Jordan, I'm speculating just a little bit here, but reading between the lines of the statements that they put out, and then also just talking to Senate sources about the incoming calls that they were receiving, Jordan, I think both those senators heard very strongly from their constituents, Nebraskans and North Carolinians, that their constituents believe there is a national emergency on the border, and that while they understand their senators might want some reform to the National Emergencies Act of 1976, I think they heard a huge outcry from their voters that they wanted their senators to, sure, go ahead and focus on reform, but as it stands to this national emergency, this declaration by President Trump, they wanted their senator to stand with the president. Jordan, I really do believe that's why those two senators in the end chose to stand with the president and chose to vote against this resolution of disapproval.
So Than, let's go through the list so people know if it was one of their senators who, and if they support President Trump or they don't support President Trump on this, they will know all Democrats voted against the president's national emergency declaration. 12 Republicans. So we're going to focus on the 12 Republicans. It's easy to say if you got Democrat senators, they voted no. So they voted for this, but they voted against the president. Here are the 12 Republicans. Dan can go through them by name and state.
Sure. It's Lamar Alexander from Tennessee, Senator Roy Blunt from Missouri, Senator Susan Collins of Maine, Senator Mike Lee of Utah, Senator Jerry Moran of Kansas, Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, Senator Rob Portman of Ohio, Senator Mitt Romney of Utah, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, and Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi. Jordan, there was one other senator that I just also wanted to point out, in addition to the group of Senator Tillis and Senator Sass, who we had indicated might be considering voting for this resolution disapproval. That was Ted Cruz of Texas, again, a border state.
Yeah.
I think maybe not surprisingly, he voted with the president.
I know that came up yesterday with some of the callers, and we wanted to make sure that was cleared up. So, no, Ted Cruz did not vote against the president. Ben Sass did not vote against the president. Tillis did not vote against the president. We just went through those who did. Any surprises there, Than, on that list? It's kind of a hodgepodge of you've got the Rand Paul, Mike Lee types, constitutionalists, who I think are kind of sticking with where they are ideologically. And then you've got kind of these middle-of-the-road Republicans as well. And so far in the middle. And then you've got the kinds like a Lisa Murkowski and a Susan Collins.
Yeah, I think I was most surprised by Roy Blunt's vote, actually, Jordan.
He's an appropriator.
Yeah, about half of this list, I can't remember the precise number, I believe maybe 6 of the 12 are appropriators, and so there might have been some territorial concern there on behalf of Senator Blunt. I was a little surprised to see that one. Most of the others, Jordan, came from the list that we'd been talking about, people that were concerned about the overall process of this. I would just tell you this, though. I completely understand, at least ideologically, where people like Senator Lee were coming from, where maybe they would like to pull back some of the power that was granted way back in 1906 and reserve it for the Article I legislature. But, Jordan, I do think there was a conflation here on the part of these 12 senators on what the actual vote was. I mean, I know we've read the language of the resolution on this broadcast many times, but this resolution, Jordan, it did not speak to previous designations. It did not speak to reforming or repealing the 1976 Act. All this resolution did was vote to terminate the current declaration of a national emergency by the president. So while I can appreciate where Senator Lee and some others were coming from on the overall process, I don't necessarily accept when they come out and they say, well, we do think there's a national emergency. We do think the president needs to respond to this one, but we don't like the 1976 Act. This was not supposed to be a vote about that. And Jordan, you know this as well as I do. They have every ability to go back in and reform or repeal that law. That's not what yesterday's vote was about. And so I think they conflated the two. And I honestly think there may be some political peril in it for them.
Folks, if you're on Facebook and Periscope, share this with your friends and family now that we've shifted to this discussion, because this is historic. It will be the president's first veto. President Trump's first veto as president of the United States is coming any moment today. And then the question will be, did the House and the Senate even try to override it when they were so far away in their initial votes? 40 votes short in the House, 9 votes short in or 8 votes short in the U.S. Senate. I think I want to play Senator Lindsey Graham. I think he kind of lays it out for everybody about where we are by 23.
Will prevail, his veto will be sustained. Maybe we can change the statute in the future to help alleviate some of the concerns, but I just want my colleagues to know I appreciate and respect your concerns, but I don't share them. to me, this statute allows the president to use military construction in a national emergency, and I think we have one.
And that's Senator Graham, and again, it was a little unclear, it was in the hallway, but he said, we'll prevail, the veto will be sustained. That means the president's veto will be upheld. This will go into effect, the National Emergency Declaration. And he's a military man, Wes. He served much of his time in the U.S. Senate. He served as a reservist,
right.
Lindsey Graham. A lot of people look past that or just don't know that about him. And he believes also that statute allows the president to use that military construction, which is how all this works together. It's not just the National Emergency Declaration, but then other statutes at play. So your thoughts on just how this is playing out?
I think it's safe to say that this vote in both chambers of Congress is not veto-proof. I think the veto will stand, the national emergency will remain in effect, and construction will continue on the parts where it's already begun, but new construction will also begin as well. The Democrats are saying in this argument, they're talking about the separation of powers and that the Constitution puts the power of the purse in the House of Representatives, and that is true, but this is not really about the power of the purse or about the budget. It's more about mission and program, because the president, he's not creating new funding sources or appropriating brand new dollars, but under his powers in the National Emergencies Act, he is merely redirecting funds that have already been allocated, but under this act, they fall under the president's discretion. He has the perfect authority, the legal right to do what he's doing, both constitutionally and statutorily. And so they're making it like he's trying to somehow rob Congress of their duties or steal the purse. He's not stealing the purse. He declared an emergency under the law they passed, and these funds are at his discretion during an emergency.
So here we go. We're going into a break. In our final segment, we take all your phone calls. Donna and Mike, hang on. We'll be coming to you first. And we're talking about this issue, the president's first veto. First time President Trump has had to issue a veto as president of the United States. He's going to do so today. It could happen at any moment, maybe while we're still on the air, maybe not. Then the House and Senate will have to decide if they even try to override it. They were so short. They fell so far short in the Democrat-controlled House and in the Republican-controlled Senate. You have to question whether or not they're even going to go through that process and then fail. But we will wait and see. We want your thoughts. Do you support the president's veto in the National Emergency Declaration? And what do you think of these 12 Republican senators who joined the Democrats in voting against the president in this national emergency on our border? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I do believe, as the president said, they can use whatever ideological arguments they want. You could change the law. But on this vote, they were voting against our national security and our border security, these 12 Republicans. Ideologically, you can handle the legislation a different way. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. If you're on Facebook and Periscope, click that share button. Let's get people in this conversation now.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support.
Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
one 800 684 3110 is the number you call. That's 1-800-684-3110. Right before we get to the phones, I told you we would have a meme ready from our Be Heard project on New Zealand condemning that, so you could share it on social media. It's being shared now, and there's a image of it right there, so that you can share through Be Heard and let it be known that you care about what happened in New Zealand, regardless of the faith of those worshipers who were terrorized and killed. So I encourage you to share that with your friends and family on social media, so people know where you stand on that incident, that you condemn it, even if it's against a different faith. It shouldn't matter at all. Now we go right back to politics here, and let's go right to the phones in order. 1-800-684-3110. We do have a line open if you want to talk to us on air. 1-800-684-3110. Donna in Ohio on line 3. Donna, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you. I called Rob Portman's office in D.C. today, which always goes to voicemail, and I left a message, and I told him that Ohio voted for President Trump in 2016. We support him. Rob Portman is not a member of the House of Lords, and he's supposed to vote with the people of Ohio who want President Trump's emergency order to protect the border.
What do you think, Harry?
Well, I think the caller is on to something. I think it's clear beyond question that there is indeed a crisis at our southern border. The facts are incontrovertible. And so if principled Republicans are concerned about setting a bad precedent with the issuance of President Trump's national emergency declaration, they should instead lead the effort to invalidate the National Emergencies Act of 1976 rather than seek to overturn President Trump's declaration on border security. After all, there are more than 31 other national emergency declarations in force. And so it's doubtful that President Trump's issuance of another one sets a bad precedent for some future Democrat. So if you are principled, act in a principled way, and it's far from clear that the Republicans who voted with Chuck Schumer acted in a principled way yesterday.
Let's go to a Facebook comment, and then we'll go to Mike in Texas. Mike, hang on there. Cheryl Pinto wrote in, is this Dirty Dozen, these 12 Republicans who voted against the National Emergency Declaration, are they up for re-election soon? Than, for the most part, it was those who may have had issues with it that were up for re-election soon who voted in favor. They didn't want to be on the wrong side of Donald Trump, the Cory Gardners, the Tillises of the world, who may have made those last-minute decisions to say, you know what, I don't need President Trump angry at me and his supporters angry at me. It is politics in Washington, D.C. And also, they weren't going to get to veto-proof majorities regardless. But what about the 12? Any of these up for re-election in the next cycle?
Yeah, in some ways it was a free vote because they were so far beneath the veto-proof override. I don't have the exact breakdown of the election cycle, but as I just glanced through it, Jordan, I mean, you're correct. Most of these are one of two things, or sometimes even both. Most of them are at least a couple of cycles away from re-election, so there's not a lot of electoral pressure on them. The other ones are maybe in states where, you know, they've at least calculated that a little bit of independence from the president might not be a bad thing. I got to tell you, I think on this one, that's probably a poor calculation, Jordan. The call that we just had talking about Rob Portman's office, I know Senator Portman has said that he believes there is a national emergency, but he just doesn't like the expansive power of the 1976 Act. Well, I would remind Senator Portman that his vote yesterday, Jordan, It didn't do anything to change that 1976 Act. It just simply voted to terminate the existing national emergency. So I'm afraid he's in the position of having to tell his voters that he cast his vote for one reason when actually the actual vote was for another reason.
I mean, is he arguing that the president doesn't even need this legislation because he's got the constitutional power, Harry? I mean, I guess the other argument is you could try this. This was legislation to actually try, and a lot of people don't talk about this in 1976, to limit the president's power, because the courts have had it. It's pretty expansive when it comes to federal property and declaring national emergencies, because it's the commander-in-chief and the executive's job to see that the laws are faithfully executed, to protect our Constitution, make sure it's upheld.
I think you're precisely correct. Keep in mind that what President Trump did was designed to enforce existing law. He has a constitutional obligation to protect national security from all threats, foreign and domestic. So what do we have on our southern border? We have drug trafficking. We have human trafficking. We have sex trafficking. We have enough fentanyl coming into the United States from our southern border to kill every American twice. So those are incontrovertible facts. Number two, the National Emergencies Act of 1976 was an explicit recognition by Congress that the president indeed does have constitutional authority, and it was designed to limit it. And so Congress has the right to attempt to overturn the National Emergency Declaration. They lack the votes, however, to invalidate it if the president vetoes it, as he most likely will. So at the end of the day, the argument made by Republicans in voting to overturn the National Emergency Declaration with respect to the border is incoherent, as Than rightly points out.
Let's take these final two calls of the day. Let's start with Mike in Texas on line six. Mike, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you. Hi, guys. Thank you for all the work you do and taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment that I fully support the president, and I was very happy that Senator Ted Cruz did as well.
Yep.
But my question for you is, I understood that the president does not have to sign the bill or veto it either way. If he doesn't sign it either way, it simply goes away after a matter.
Only if you're within a time period of a legislation, a session ending. You're talking about a pocket veto, and there's a little bit of confusing law there. So if you're president, you want to veto something, you veto it. Then there is a pocket veto, but you'd have to have like an adjournment. Congress would have to be out of session within a period of a certain amount of days. There's also, the president has 10 days excluding Sunday. So it counts, Saturday counts, 10 days to veto it, or it becomes law so long as Congress is in session.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's Article 1, Section 7, and the pocket veto comes into play if during that 10-day period you're talking about, Congress adjourns and Jordan does not set up a situation where they leave an agent behind to receive a veto. Standing practice for a long time now has been Speaker Pelosi will leave an agent, even if they adjourn, in order to receive that veto. So if he were to wait, Jordan, and he were to not do anything, this resolution of disapproval would take effect. It would become law. So the president is going to have to veto it. And by the way, this is all academic anyway. He has said he's going to today.
We're about to get to the final call of the day. We have a victory out of our office in Pakistan. They do a lot of criminal law, or the Organization for Legal Aid is our affiliate in Lahore, Pakistan. We have an office in Pakistan, folks. And they have successfully recovered a Christian family of five from captivity, forced labor, and physical torture. The police actually went in to recover this family that was being held because Christians are treated so poorly in Pakistan. So again, Pakistan, the government doing the right thing, but we had to go to court to get this done. It appears to be similar to like our petition for habeas corpus in the Lahore High Court, a victory for persecuted Christians in Pakistan. Brings me right to why you got to support the work of the ACLJ, our matching challenge. You double the impact of our work at ACLJ.org. Whatever you donate today is doubled. We have someone ready to match that donation. It's why that family is free in Pakistan right now, because of your support. Go to ACLJ.org and donate today. Pray for the people in New Zealand.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.